I'm Tammy Zadunik, your host of Lead Like a Girl, the feminine leadership podcast from the Well Collab. This is a space for honest, unfiltered conversations about leading with heart, courage, and emotional intelligence. I sit down with inspiring women to explore leadership beyond the hustle, grounded in equity, connection, and authenticity. Let's reimagine leadership together.
You always bring new things up for me, Bree, which is why I want to do this specific podcast on gender, work, and the feminine economy. I love that you have notes because I just looked at your app right there. So can you just tell us who you are?
Yeah, for sure. I have, and as you're talking, I just have so many thoughts. Like, I want to tell 100 stories right now, right? So I am a social impact consultant, and I've been self-employed in that space since about 2021, but dabbling for a little longer than that. I have a background in sociology. I'm definitely not a gender and women's studies expert. That is not my particular area of study. I've been more involved in the space around like life-limiting illnesses and how that affects different people, like cancer and things like that within Indigenous communities, for instance. But that has a huge gender piece to it, right? So I like just I feel like everything that I encounter, I always have this gender lens on it, which is so interesting. And when you were talking, I was thinking about my childhood, and I was labeled as a tomboy, although that wasn't a term that I really like resonated with me, but people called me that and I was like, okay, well, I guess I am, right? You accept that label. And I did a lot of, it was because I did a lot of things that would otherwise have been for boys, right? So I grew up on a farm. I wore like jeans and a t-shirt every day. So I wasn't dressing girly enough was one of the messages that I received. And I played hockey on a quote unquote boys team for years, like, 10 years. And I remember the time at which the parents decided I couldn't change and get ready for the hockey game in the same room as the boys, because now we're growing up and, you know, our bodies are developing and we can't be in the same space. And it wasn't that tipped me off, but to the gender difference, but I was always aware that I was doing things that were for boys as a girl. And I was okay with it. And I am okay with it. Like, I'm a person that will go against the grain 9 times out of 10.
That's why I love you. I think that's why I find our conversation so interesting. And I've been wanting to have you on the podcast because I want to be able to maybe pull more of that out of you or allow other people to experience that more. And it's interesting too with your story, because mine is actually, I was very, very feminine. The only thing I did was like what's deemed as feminine was like play dress up. I loved Madonna. I would like dress like her, really like sexy. Like I really liked the sexual aspect of my femininity, and I would get pictures and, you know, kind of like life has not changed that much for me. I was dressing up and taking pictures and having my girls over. But my energy in terms of leadership has been, I actually don't think it's necessarily masculine, but I think it could be looked at because it's strong and it can come across dominating. And I think that is typically identified as masculine.
That's right. Yeah. So I think the big thing for me, as I've been thinking about what to say on this podcast, because interestingly enough, I still have all these conversations with people that you think you might not be having still in 2024.
Right.
And I don't want to shame anyone, but I do also want to challenge people to take a look at the gender gap and the gender issue and what that means and how we embody that in our daily lives, because it's really important. What I was going to just distinguish between was like sex and gender for anyone who's listening, right? And so sex is related to your anatomy that you're born with. But on the other side of that, gender is a social construct. It's something that we've created socially as a society to kind of categorize. There is boxes, right? We used to have two boxes, woman and man.
Right.
Male and female is about sex. Woman and man is about gender. And there's certain roles that go with the words that are ascribed to you, right? Like being a mother. And being a caregiver, that's a huge one, right? there are differences in gender for how people think that you're going to handle solutions. And there's also real differences in the experiences that we have based on the systems that exist and how those create different consequences or rewards for depending on what your identity is. So those are big concepts, but I think it's really important to understand the difference between gender and sex. And then one more step is that femininity versus masculinity. And for the most part, I think it is connected with the concept of gender, like man versus woman. But I think we can embody what we consider masculine traits. And an awesome example is like when we say boss bitch. I love that term. I think it's fun. But at the end of the day, if you look into it, what it's doing is saying this woman uses authority like a man would.
Exactly.
At work, right?
She, CEO.
Yes.
CEO, boss babe, boss bitch. All of those things are basically saying she's acting like a man in her position rather than being a woman who happens to also be a CEO.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's so interesting that we have to come, the first thing we say, you know, is to acknowledge the gender. And it's like, why though? Like maybe that's part of the conversation and that's great because there's all kinds of things that your gender will change for your experience of getting to be at the CEO level.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. But why do we have to start with that? Right. It's kind of like the, your prefix on your name. For a man, it's always Mr. or Doctor, I guess. But for a woman, it's Miss or Ms. if you're like not married, but too old to be a Miss still, or Mrs., right? So the words we use, even that is a gendered thing, right? Because the words we use then tell people what our marital status is. And so it's interesting because what that tells me is that socially and culturally, that's been such a big, we really need that information, right? Or the systems think that they really need that information. Is she married or is she not? What does it matter, right? Like, and it changed the value of a woman based on your marital status.
Because he's just Mr. no matter what.
Exactly.
Brie, I have never thought about that before. My understanding is that women needed to get married, but men didn't need to get married. We needed to get married, and it was often like someone who could provide for us, but men could be much older when they got married. And I mean, I'm such a fan of like Downton Abbey and what's that other one, the Shonda Rhimes one?
Bridgerton.
I mean, that's more reasons that I love Bridgerton than just this for the reason.
Well, and sexuality is, we could talk about that too.
I love Bridgerton. I love that they have these really innocent covers up to their shows, but it's actually all about sex in the actual show.
Yeah,
it's brilliant. I feel like I would love to talk to her about how she feels about gender because she's really fighting those things within her show, but also showing reality of it. But women have needed to get married for status and for safety and for because they weren't the ones who were providing. And I'll tell you right now, I live in a home where my husband is the main provider. And my goal my whole life has been to make more money than my husband. And he would love that. He wants that for me. But because of having kids and taking three kids and taking those breaks to have kids and really prioritizing my family as my value above work and business, I haven't reached that goal yet. And I know that I have made choices. I understand that I have made choices that align with my values, but it's also very hard to get ahead as a woman for me based on the world that I live in and that has been built for me.
Yeah, that really resonates with me actually because I sometimes feel like it's a choice between values or that financial capitalist growth for the sake of growth that's like linear and just destroys everything in its path, kind of.
Yes, exactly.
Right? It's this me for me kind of thinking. And I think that that's so detrimental. And I've been there. It's been extremely detrimental to my mental health.
Yeah.
And what I learned was that I need to live based on my values, and then I need to make my values translate into financial stability. And that's almost impossible. Like, it's really hard.
We're going to talk about that. And actually, I'm going to go into the proposals for the Feminine Economy by Jennifer Armbrust a little bit right now, because I want a little bit of background on this before we dig further. I have these last 6 years of running the well. I am just before you got here today, I was like, is it possible? Can you make money while living into your values? I'm constantly wondering this. And I know there's an exception of people who do. But I know that the general rule is that is not how the business world is constructed. So it is not constructed. Networking is not constructed that way. Anytime I go into like an event or into a room or into a meeting that is not the well, it is not made for the way I think. And things are already in place in a way that does not support us putting values first. I'll just read a few pages here. If we view the patriarchy not as men dominating women, but as masculine dominance and feminine subjugation, we notice that not just women, but all feminized subjects are dominated, devalued, discredited, or controlled. Consider that money, water, the moon, mysticism, and witchcraft, and the earth also belong to the feminine archetype, and we see that patriarchy is not just concerned with controlling female bodies, the feminine symbols as well. And one note, my understanding of patriarchy from Jennifer Armbrust is it's power over. So it's having power over something else. So women can be patriarchal and men can be patriarchal. It's not about sex. It's about an idea.
Absolutely.
And feminism in a lot of ways has been patriarchal. And we'll get into that a little bit more too.
And feminism is not a movement against men.
No, it is not. No.
If there's one takeaway from this podcast, I want people to realize feminism is not a movement against men. That's so important, because I think it puts, you know, whether it's men or the masculine identifying people, we don't want to, it's not our point to put you on the defensive.
No.
It's about understanding and taking steps toward adjusting the way that our society and institutions work so that there is equity.
Yeah, we're definitely going to get into that, because my understanding too of feminism is that it's the end of sexual exploitation of all genders. So it's ending sexual exploitation, which ultimately, like, if a woman is doing unpaid labor at home because she's a woman, that's ultimately like you're exploiting her based on her sex. So it's 100%. That it can be that simple. You know, feminism is that simple.
Well, and there was that, I just read a post this morning from Forbes. And so this is based in the US, but there was a research study that basically resulted in saying that the care economy, which is all very wrapped up in what women are expected to do and what the feminine energy is toward, is the care economy. So we take care of everybody, whether it's like the children or the older adults or somebody who's sick or has an injury, right? We are very much expected to care for others in our society. And if we were compensated for that, including managing a household and all the scheduling involved, if we were compensated for that, it would equal $60,000 a year per person. And you know what? That would be perfect. I would love that.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like 85,000 Canadian. Yes, please.
I'm into that.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing too that I was thinking about. You shared that article with me this morning and I was looking at it and thinking, I had just had a conversation with someone. I think it was at family camping. It was a relative. It was a guy. And of course, this conversation came up and we were talking about, you know, a man will work and he doesn't have to take a maternity leave because he's not birthing a child. So there are differences between male and female, but there are actual scientific differences in our body. And when I birth a child, there are certain hormonal things that happen to me that I need to be doing and handling and managing. And there are things that I have to do and that only I can do. So when we leave work in order to bring a human into the world, no matter how long, whether it's 4 weeks, I only took 3 weeks with my first child. So whether it's 3 weeks or it's a year or 2 years, I'm doing important work.
And absolutely.
My work is making me a better employee.
It is making me someone who is more educated, who is more adaptable, who is more resilient. Why is that discounted compared to someone who is still in the company for the next year? Why shouldn't I rise as quickly as that person if you look at the skills that I'm developing? Why is having a child makes us a worse employee when it actually, in fact, makes us much more efficient?
Absolutely. Think about what moms can do and get accomplished. And, you know, if I see a project that's kind of floundering or like a system that's not working, I'm like, they need a mom. You know, that's my first
really
thoughts, right? Like, they need a mom because they just know how to get it done, right? And again, like this, I think this whole conversation is about not generalizing between gender.
But we have to talk.
I think
it's into play.
That's right. And I think it's something like moms have to figure out just so many of the logistics. And there are those instances where the father is going to take on a lot of that, maybe more than you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
But still so much there is that prescripted sort of social narrative that's still playing out. And we're not at gender parity yet, for sure. Because for me, a big part of feminism is choice, right? It's if you look at 15 women and 12 of them like cooking, you can't just turn around and say, women like cooking and they must do it. And this is your job because you're good at it. So just accept it, right? Like, I just want the opportunity to like what I like and be good at what I'm good at. And other people can fill in those gaps, right?
That is exactly what it's about, is choice.
What I want to say, the way that I would put it, I think, is that people of any gender should be able to choose what identities they take on, right? At the end of the day, we're all like humankind. We're all people, right? And the choice comes back to it. And you should not be disadvantaged based on your gender, sex, or sexual orientation.
Yes.
So that's how I would put it.
It's you. I love it. We're going to stick with that.
But I appreciate the learning because I'm wanting to learn.
Me too. I mean, it's not a pass-fail. Like, I love that you're exploring this concept and then putting it out into the world where other people can experience this. Because, like, disclaimer, I don't think I'm going to say every single thing right in this podcast. I've already probably made a couple mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like, we can't not have the conversation because we're worried about offending someone or not using the newest, wokest term, because it's a way of just kind of discrediting the whole conversation and then not being able to have it, which I think is the worst case scenario.
I agree. Fear of failure stops us from speaking, you know, and learning. And I learn through, I'm an external processor. So if I don't have safe spaces to externally process, then I don't move ahead. And we all need to have spaces where we can externally process safely without fear of judgment and shame, but where we're open to learning and be able to process things. I mean, that's why The Well exists. That's
why The Well exists. You've solved so many of those issues that you've listed, right? And I always say I would not be self-employed still had I not had The Well for the last 2 years. Like, I say that constantly, and post it on social media, because I think, and maybe this is more of a point for later, but when we're talking about like mitigating these issues and challenges and barriers that we encounter because of gender, what I've really been pulled toward lately is, as much as I do quite a bit of policy advocacy, so in my business, I'll do quite a bit of professional writing. And sometimes that means I'm writing critical reports that talk about why things are messed up and how they need to change and what the financial and economic implications of that are. And it goes to the government of Saskatchewan, and the Ministry of Health gets to read about those things and try to figure out and make decisions based on that, which I think is fantastic. That's one of my favorite things to do in my work. But at the same time, I've been more called toward, you know what, we can change the system, but it's so big, right? And in our lifetime, I don't think we're going to realize those unless we just create our own path. Like, I want to just be like, you've got your railroad over there, and it's a railroad because you're stuck on it, right? But I'm going to make this like, I don't know, I want to say mine is more like a river float, you know? It's progress, but it follows cycles rather than a linear path, and it's responsive to the environment and the weather and the things and the other people in the river, right? Like, it's not a bulldozer or this train on a track.
I like love that so much, because when, you know, when you drive through the mountains,
mm-hmm.
and they have blown up the mountain to put the train through.
Yeah.
But the river is running alongside and it is on its natural course.
Mm-hmm.
And it still gets there, but it's slower.
Yeah.
It's more thought. It's more natural.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's less efficient. You know, but it's actually very efficient, because mm-hmm. water is highly efficient, but it's not, you know, we don't have to destroy everything in our path to get where we want to go. But that's exactly what the railroad did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you don't have to expend the amount of energy that all of the dynamite did in order to get through the mountain, right? It's more, it's the word that comes for me is responsive, right? It's not a straight linear path. It's responsive and fluid. And I mean, the concept of water is such a symbol for femininity and life and
right
water
and the moon, because it's cyclical.
And I mean, water is life. It can give life. It can take it away. Like, think about
powerful.
Exactly.
It can destroy.
Yeah. And I want to be like the river, not like the train. Right. That's honestly, probably one of my central paradigms in life is I constantly reference the way of the water, which means, oh, I'm going to get there. But instead of going through the rock, I'm going to go around it, because isn't that kind of smarter, right? Like, doesn't it make more sense?
Let the river take you.
Yeah.
It also flows.
Let it happen.
It's also a flowing, and it's not resisting what is, but accepting what is and surrendering to it and allowing it to take you on it on the right path, rather than being like, no, I'm going to do this way no matter what. And I think that pulls us back into our bodies, because our bodies know. So when how do you apply the river to navigating business? You listen to your body. Your body will tell you when you need to stop pushing for that, or you need to evolve into something different, or you need to take a different direction. My body always tells me, and I get to choose whether I listen to it or not. And if I don't listen to it and I just keep going, it's actually, at the end of the day, trying to achieve my goals is actually slowed.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually, by bulldozing through, I'm actually slowing the process of what I really want, what my actual goal is, and or where I'm actually meant to be, meant to get to.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can just resist the need to do things quickly, because the funny thing about that is, if you even think of it as water, like, it's going to take you on these natural ebbs and flows, and sometimes it's going to be faster than the people who use the dynamite, and it's going to happen in a second, because that water is just going to rush you right past all those roadblocks, and you're going to get there really quickly, and sometimes it's going to feel really slowly, but it's not going to be on your timeline.
Yeah.
It's going to be on the natural timeline of what is meant to be. And that, I think, is the hardest part for people, because it is the lack of control and it is the complete opposite of the patriarch.
Yeah, I love that. And it's just surrender, that word.
Surrender
is, I think, such a great, I don't know if it's in the proposals for the feminine economy, but I think that.
I think she would.
That might have been one of the, yeah.
Oh, well, look.
Jennifer, this is for you.
Look at them. Okay, I'll read a little bit more here. Okay. Sorry. Women have traditionally been the carriers of the feminine, but it doesn't belong to them alone. In a healthy and balanced world, all humans would embody masculine and feminine qualities fluidly and in unique balance, regardless of their sex organs. So I really want to read that, because that's really important, that men and women alike understand that all genders embody masculine and feminine, and you're going to embody them differently at different times. There's a flow to that. And the other thing I find just really interesting is she lists out some different qualities here of typical masculine economy versus feminine economy. And I find this hard, because the masculine economy feels negative. And I don't actually think that that's what anyone is striving towards. I think there's just been some systems in place that have made that happen, but I think, and the feminine economy seems really like positive. So sometimes that's a little bit hard for me, but I'm gonna read them to you anyway. So I'll read you a few of them. I'll compare them. So some would be like perpetual consumption would be a masculine economy, and whereas the feminine would be resourcefulness. Scarcity would be masculine and abundance would be feminine. So linear growth is more of a masculine trait and cyclical growth is a feminine trait. Individualism is more masculine and interdependence and collaboration are feminine. Masculine is more competition, speed, and efficiency, whereas the feminine is more ease. So there's a lot of them in here. I really say, like, get the book. The book is just wonderful. But
well, and even I notice hierarchy in masculine versus sustainability in feminine. And like, that's huge for me because we really have to ask ourselves what we can sustain long term. It's not about the short term gratification and benefit. And it matters who you have to step on to achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's that everyone can win in the feminine economy, I suppose. But it's more... it's about the whole and it's about doing things together and not doing things on alone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is so when we found Jennifer Armbrust, we were probably 3 years in, 4 years in maybe, because it's been 6 years. And I felt like we were embodying this, but we didn't have like a name for it or a framework or anything to a resource. And then we all of a sudden came across Jennifer Armbrust, and actually it was Tahira in our CFO who had told me about her. And I read it and was like, this is exactly what we're doing. This is the well.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that this was actually something that was a real thing.
Yeah.
I knew. So I don't feel like an expert on feminine economy at all, but I feel like the well embodies it already.
Mm-hmm.
And I even look at our growth and the way we've moved, and it's always been very intuitive, very spiritual, very connected, very much like with the community, and always trying to think about what's best for the community and what's best for the team.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of valuing that equally.
And I love that. Like, I think that's a feminine concept too, is that the benefit is both directions, right? Like the clients or the membership benefits as much as the organization and the people within it, which is so important.
I think when you're starting something new, like the well or your business, you know, it's when you're trying to do something within your values, it's harder to make money. So it can feel like you're doing something wrong. And I think the reason that that's happening, that it's not as quick when you're trying to run a business based on feminine principles, is because it is not normal and there's no system set up for that. And I love what you said about rather than trying to change the system, just create something new.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's what we did too, like with the well, just create something new. I'm not interested in going into a pre-existing system and trying to change it. It's the same with the church. And we're not going to get into these religious trauma things, but it's the same with the church or with I understand why some people just homeschool or create their own school or create their own, because they're frustrated with the systems that exist and they don't feel like they can have an impact and they recognize what's at stake. And I knew that if I tried to run the well under the previously constructed institutions, it would never work.
Well, because I think it would look a lot like some things that are already
yes.
out there mm-hmm. that are already there. And that's great. Like we're not dismantling anything really. Like those systems are going to stay in place. We just want this like sort of parallel or complementary system mm-hmm. that just fits better for the people that are current institutions weren't created for.
Yeah.
And, you know, unless you're like an older white male,
yeah,
it's not you.
I don't even think those systems support men or the most privileged. I understand they benefit them. So I want to say there's a difference.
Benefit, yes.
I understand it benefits them financially and in hierarchy and in
pride and ego and all these things, but I actually think it is not supportive for them in health in any of the ways that the things that really matter to us. I think it's hurt. It hurts them as much. They just, there's so much fear in like what you might lose.
Mm-hmm. So many thoughts. Yeah, because those systems are made around what we see as that capitalist masculine business economy, right? And so in a way, the way that those systems work, it's for those white men, it's because that's what's been indoctrinated to them about who they should be.
Should be.
And now you're starting to see all these things. I am actually, I wrote a grant application earlier this year about Indigenous men's wellness. And until now, it's been very focused on supporting women and children and not men, basically. And I think that that's now needs to change very quickly because I think you're right. The systems benefit white men, but they don't support them, right? So we look at like men's like suicide rates and how men don't have spaces to be emotionally vulnerable and explore their emotional intelligence and stuff like that. And that hurts us all.
It does. And I think there's something about, and my thought is not fully formed on this, but I knew with The Well, I felt called to women and I knew that women was what I was going to start with. And that's where what we're working with right now. And I knew that we needed to get the women on board first, I think. Women have so much more influence than, I mean, I think we know, but I think also at times we don't use it. I think we have a lot of influence with the people around us.
Mm-hmm.
And what was I going to say?
Well, and I think there's a lot of, like, we moralize women still for that. Like, a word that I really want to bring up is transgression, right? So that's any time that you're looking at, like, a social norm and you depart from that. So if you're like, you're like, I'm a woman who loves using power tools and building things, and in our backyard, I build the garden boxes and my husband does the gardening. And so that's genderqueer to an extent. And me using power tools and really enjoying that is a transgression from what we would expect from those gender norms.
Yeah. I mean, even in my past community, some of my past communities I've been a part of, I'm working is a transgression. Putting my kids in a public school or in a Catholic public school system, not homeschooling, is a transgression.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's so many transgressions, and it depends what community you're a part of. And I think those transgressions equally apply to men in the term of if they're not, you know, holding down a full-time job, or if they suffer with mental health, or if, you know, they want to be more involved with their kids, or if they're able to listen to hard emotions, like if they cry. Like, there's all these transgressions that happen to women and men.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to stop saying that. And I want that to stay on the podcast because to all people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. To all people. We just want to be able to people our way. Like, just be the person that we are. And it's so much funner if it's just a collection of what you love and who you are at the core, because that to me is just more authentic and honest, right?
And I think that's why we're starting with women with this conversation. I think that's why women, and what I mean by that is women are leading this conversation, because we have been in these collaborative conversations. We've been allowed to show our emotions. We've been allowed to disagree with one another and like in certain communities and have these hard conversations. And we've had, really for me, it's been like a privilege to like be with my kids and be able to explore these ideas and not have to have the pressure of being the primary provider for me, not the story for a lot of women listening. But for me personally, I have not had the pressure. So I've had the privilege of being able to explore these ideas. And I think through that, I'm going, okay, wait, like this isn't working.
we can now start to have this conversation. And I think that filters into our homes where we have influence mm-hmm. on the people around us. And then we're starting to change the conversation, which is then going to change from the inside out a lot of the way that men at the top are thinking. I think if we can use this influence to impact the change within the people we're closest to, we can't change this whole system. And that's never something that's not the way I work, through force.
Mm-hmm.
So I work through influence.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, how can I have these conversations at family camping with a bunch of farmers mm-hmm. who have are not used to these kind of conversations? Am I okay being the bad guy? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah. So this is a way that we can have influence in a way that is very feminine. Mm-hmm. It's not aggressive,
mm-hmm.
but I think it does create change.
I think so. It feels just so small though, right? Because I think that there's some really big, real changes that need to be made.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not going to sit around and wait for the current institutions to change them, because it's never fast enough, right? I feel like we're solving problems that should have been solved 20 years ago,
yeah.
right? Like on like a provincial government level, for example, right? I'm like, why is this still a problem? We've seen this in Saskatchewan. We've seen the issue of the aging population growing at a ridiculously rapid rate for years and years and years. We have population data. We know that this was coming. And now we have this situation where our long-term care is in an awful state because nothing was done 20 years ago when it could have been, right? And the reason I bring that up is because that revolves around care economy, right? So that's an example of a government level decision that impacts women, because women are very much wrapped into the care economy. And it's just those sorts of things. I'm no longer comfortable hoping or expecting someone else to fix that or change it. And that's why I'm like, well, let's just do something else, right? I know that I'm not a great caregiver as far as it comes to like that medical, you know, the way you would need to care for like an aging parent who could no longer live on their own or something. I don't feel like that's in my capacity. And like, if my parents are listening to this, I'm sorry. But I've also said it to them, like, okay, so we're going to save for when you're old, because I have to hire someone to care for you, because I know I can't do those things and remain well, which to me is very rooted in my values and a feminine approach to that issue.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like, oh, I'm just going to do what needs to be done, because that's what needs to be done. And doesn't matter if I'm going to burn out and get depression and anxiety and ruin my financial status. Nope. We need to have these conversations now before that's an issue that I have to deal with on my own and figure it out. Like, I'm having this conversation. My parents they're in their 50s still, right?
So young.
Just to show you, like, these conversations are happening years, a decade or more before they need to happen, right?
Yes.
And that's important.
Yeah, that is so good. So is that how you feel? Like, how do you feel like we need to... What can we do? What can we do? Those of us who are really concerned about these things, but don't necessarily have this power system. You know, we don't have this power that we can just go in there and like. So what do you feel like we can do? Other than like what you've said is great. Yeah. Because I don't want to do that either. I don't want to be the caregiver, but that makes me feel ashamed of myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, and I feel like when you were talking, I'm having a physical reaction.
Really? Interesting.
Because I agree with everything you're saying, and I want to say, me neither. I do not want to do that. But then there must be something wrong with me as a mm-hmm. woman.
Right. Because we've been told, you know, and shown in 100,000 different ways that women are caregivers, right? And we still are of the age where, like, I grew up on the farm and I watched, my mom did go to work a bit later, like once I was in sort of middle school age, but you know, my grandma was at home on the farm and that was her job. And we would make the meals and take them out to the field. And I think those are incredible memories. And I love that that was my upbringing. But at the same time, I was always acutely aware of like, how come I'm not in the field with dad? Yeah. I'm just delegated to being in the kitchen with grandma. And there was amazing things that happened there. And I learned things from her. And she had her own transgressions, right? Which now I see them and I think they're so fascinating because they were the transgressions that she felt she could do safely, right? Yeah. She would do these little, just very quirky little things that you might not see from like a woman who wants to be seen as like someone, you know, within her like church community is what I think of, is how she would act one way at church. And then, you know, she had her ways of having these little transgressions, right? And that I think we just need to build on. So as far as what we can do,
love
that. It's just give yourself permission to transgress to the max. Like give yourself permission. Just say, I don't want to be a woman who wears makeup every day. I don't want to be a woman who wears form-fitting clothes every day. And it's not just about aesthetics. It's I want to be a woman who asks for what I want at work in terms of salary, or, you know, negotiates when getting a contract offer or something like that, charging what I'm worth. Those things are what we can do. So it's just everything.
It's kind of everything. So I have such a rebellion in me.
Yeah.
I mean, you know that.
Well, and I was going to say, I think you and I have an access to that I would like to share with the people who are listening, right? Because it's like, just give yourself permission to transgress and do the things that you want to do, even when you, especially when you feel that shame, that pang of shame, and you say, I don't want to take care of my parents when they're elderly because I don't think I can stay well throughout that myself, mentally and physically. Just acknowledge the shame and figure out a way to move past it. Yeah, don't let it stop you.
And don't let, so what you're initially going to feel, I think like you and I are even, we're even able to feel in our bodies and then understand what's going on and ask that question. And I think for a lot of people, they get stuck almost at the body piece.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, I feel gross from this thought. So I must be bad and terrible and I'm a bad person. And they end it there and then they do the thing that they will be resentful about and that will make them sick and that will hurt their life and hurt them as a person. And then you get to a certain age and you just wish you had, because you hit either dis-ease or burnout or like caregiver burnout or something. And you're like, now I have to. So I was given the gift at a young age of panic disorder and agoraphobia. And because of that, I cannot do what I can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And it is like a fire in my belly that comes up as soon as something is said to me. And it is like such a hard no.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't, physically, I can't do the thing or I will crumble and panic and like be sick. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's been a gift for me. But I think a lot of people can bypass that. They don't have like what I have where it actually shuts me down. Mm-hmm. So I'm so glad I have that because I have very, like, even when you're talking about that, I'm like having this, I don't think it's visceral. I don't, maybe it's visceral, but this reaction to it. And I'm going, ugh, I hate this right now. I don't want to do that. Why do I feel shame? Oh, it's because it's a gender thing. It's actually not about me. I am not doing that. Mm-hmm. And it's like in that moment, I'm like, nope.
Yep.
And I might have to fight, but if it is because it's such a terrible feeling in my body that I don't want, I will not give in. Mm-hmm. There's certain things I'll give in on that I will push past. We also know about that. Some things we have to push past are discomfort.
Yeah.
Because it's maybe fear-based or it's something actually we need to do that's healthy. So you do have to discern the feelings in your body.
Yeah.
You're gonna know there's something off. So you're gonna need to know, is this fear and it's actually something I need to move past and it is a healthy thing for me? Mm-hmm. Or is this actually something that's just a hard no that needs to like mm-hmm. come off my plate and I need to find a solution? So I feel like it's first just get in touch with how your body responds to either someone saying something to you or you being told you need to do something. Like it's that small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes what I'll do, like, I love that you're talking about this physical felt sense of body, right? Because that's so it can be such an important source of information. If you are a reflective person, not everybody works this way, but for me, I got to that point also from extreme struggle. Like during the pandemic, I had severe anxiety and depression, and I had never wanted to end my life before. And it was a huge red flag for me because I knew this is not me. This isn't something that comes natural to me. I know some people live with that every day.
Yeah, it's different.
And it's not me. Like that didn't seem like something that was natural and authentic to me. And what I traced it to was just trying to be somebody who I wasn't. I was just trying to do what someone else was telling me exactly to do. And it was traumatic. And so when I came out of that, now there's almost like, it's almost like a fear. But then that fear, for me, I can move past fear. Fear does not stop me. I realize some people feel fear or shame and they go, well, I can't do that then. I'm stopping. But feel fear, feel the shame, and then I move past it. And yeah. I'm in that place, I think, because I've given myself permission to be just unapologetically myself, right? Which is indicated in my Instagram handle is unapologetically
so
Brie.
Attractive to me. Your
me too.
Instagram handle,
but not for everybody, right? Like some people like some people like more of like that curated way of showing up in the world. And I'm like, if I come and I say something really stupid, you're gonna just have to say it, and like that's okay because it's feedback, and I think that's amazing, right?
Well, and fear and shame are just information.
Yeah,
anger. It's all just emotions are. You know what my therapist said to me last week? She said, "Emotions are just your boundaries being crossed," and that's all it is. So if you're having a feeling, get your what is it trying to tell me?
Yeah, and it teaches you about your values, because I think if that is a challenging emotion, then it's telling you you're straying too far from your values and you need to align and calibrate back to that in order to remain well, right? And it's kind of, so back to, I love that you're talking about your body because it's such a potent form of information for me. And I know I've said to you, God, I've learned how to do this and listen to my body, but now I can't turn down the volume or turn it off because sometimes I just want to be like, shut the hell up. We have to do this thing, right? But it's so important to listen to. And sometimes what I'll do is I'll just say something out loud to see how my body reacts. Like, do you feel this sort of sinking, dropping, heavy feeling? That's a no, right? For me, that's what a no feels like. Whereas a hell yes is like expansive. It's like sunlight radiating from me, right? And it elevates my energy. And it's really important to tap into those things because those are the things. And so if we apply that to like a decision-making process, if something comes to you, an opportunity, and you're tempted to say yes because it's a people-pleasing moment or something that you feel that you should do because of social expectations based on who you are, like a woman and a mother, I'm just a strong believer that doing that thing for that other reason that's outside of yourself is more detrimental than beneficial, right? And you do that over and over and over again, and it turns into, like you said, disease or, mental health, illness, that kind of thing.
That's why having these conversations about gender and business are so important, because it does shape, it shapes our decisions, and it ultimately impacts our health.
Mm-hmm.
And that matters. Like if we don't have that, we don't have anything. I think of like Beaches, one of my favorite movies, and Bette Midler sings, "If I've got my health, then what do I care?" You know that movie?
I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah. For that. But obviously it's like the best movie.
Nice.
And
that's interesting because my favorite movie is The Beach with Leonardo DiCaprio.
They're very, very different. There's nothing but similar about them.
That whole movie is about departing, right? Like he's running away. He's leaving, right? And sometimes that feels just like such a good good thing to let ourselves
I want
just
to run away.
Imagine, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So I think if we can't physically run away, we can do a meditation. We could do a runaway meditation. Yeah.
Or, you know, like I find we create our own realms, our safe realms. And that's like the well, like the circle, right? The small circle you go and you sit in this and you know everybody shares similar values. They get it. They're on the same page. That's that moment when you can drop that awareness of people from other philosophies, like, you know, capitalism, when you can drop those things and just talk about
humanity,
how you are in a real, real way, like that's the healing. That's the real healing. And that's what I mean about creating our river that runs counter to the railroad, because that is the space that allows us to be who we are in the best way.
Yeah. I love that.
There's so many good things.